You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you. And I want to thank Trey Garrison for climbing into the co-pilot seat during that first hour and helping us break down the Charlottesville trial. We will continue to follow this closely as it crawls like molasses to its conclusion. We would say normally races to its conclusion, but that's certainly not the case here. Well, that is the case. Is the Kyle Rittenhouse trial where we mentioned in the last hour they started later than Charlottesville, and the prosecution and the defense have already rested, and it's about to go into deliberations. That's all within a week. Here, after 2 weeks, they're still reading posts and emails that these co-defendants may have sent that makes them look bad, they hope, to the jury. I don't know what's going on there, but I do want to give a quick shout-out to Courtney from Alabama. Now, she's been a real trooper this week. She has listened to every minute of this trial, just like I have and just like Trey Garrison has. And
The Rittenhouse trial.
No.
You're talking about the Charlottesville trial.
Well, Courtney is a courtroom content consumer.
Courtroom junkie.
She has been following, she's been listening to the Charlottesville trial in real time, and then after hours, going back and watching clips on YouTube from the other trials, and she's got a pretty good handle, even a better handle than I do on all of this, but we've been talking a lot this week, and I've really enjoyed being able to do that. Not just her, but also one of our good friends up in Nashville and some others who've been listening to the trial, staying in touch with them. But it's been as much fun as you can have with something so unfortunate. It's been nice.
It's been eye-opening. It's been both eye-opening and appalling.
That's right. Well, it was actually Courtney who brought to my attention one of Ramsey Paul's commentaries where he had compared yours truly and Jared Taylor and the approach that we take to activism versus some of the people on trial in Charlottesville. And again, I think the point should be mentioned, be careful what you say, be careful what you do. We always need to represent our movement and our cause with the sort of seriousness that it deserves.
Because Big Brother is watching you.
That's absolutely right. Don't say anything you don't want read back to you in court, that's for sure. Yeah, that's an old cliche, but it does ring true. Now, I did also notice this week that the Washington Post gave us a mention on Friday for our trial coverage in mentioning the fact that Dr. Michael Hill was on the show last week, which was very interesting to me, Keith, in so much as that Michael Hill called in at the spur of the moment and very much in an impromptu way. Not only was he not scheduled to come on the show, we didn't even mention it in the archives that he appeared because it was just a quick call in and we said hello and thanked him for his courage and he said a few words and then he left. But the Washington Post thought it noteworthy enough to mention it in a big article yesterday talking about how it was either Thursday or Friday, I don't recall, how the plaintiffs are using, or rather the defendants are using the courtroom as their platform to spew hatred.
Well, you talk about using the courtroom as a platform, that's what a slap lawsuit, which is what the Charlottesville suit is. Now, Rittenhouse is more of a standard criminal prosecution, and it's being handled that way, and that's why it's moving so much quicker.
But, you know, O.J. Simpson certainly didn't last a week.
No, it didn't. Look, it will last as long as the powers that be will tolerate. But let me tell you this. It has to be a very special case for the judges to put up with a month taken out of their calendar on one case.
Well, I got to say this about the Rittenhouse case. And obviously, I believe this kid to be innocent. I'm on his side as well. I hope justice is served here, as I hope that it is served in Charlottesville and wherever justice is needed. But I got to say this about the establishment conservative movement, as Bob Whitaker called them, the respectable conservatives. They have gone all in on Rittenhouse, and rightfully so.
But why have they? That's a $64,000 question.
I think there are a lot of similarities in the Rittenhouse case and the case in Georgia that has taken place simultaneously with the situation with Ahmaud Arbery, where he was shot by a white man in Georgia. We'll talk about that case in a minute. And he was going for their gun, and so he got shot. We've seen cases like this before. I think, though, in the case of Rittenhouse, had the people that he shot been black, the facts of the case could be exactly the same. Everything be identical, except for the people being shot black instead of white and or Jewish. And not a single person would have talked about it. The NRA wouldn't have been behind him. The gun lobbies wouldn't have been behind him. The Fox News, the Ben Shapiro's, the you name it. All of the people who were Rittenhouse, they wouldn't have touched it had the people so happened to have been black.
It doesn't matter how bad they were.
Cases could have been exactly the same. They could have committed the exact same crimes or been alleged of committing the exact same crimes as the people that Rittenhouse shot. You just changed the skin color. Not one conservative in the country would have touched it. And he would have been just as innocent, but they wouldn't have touched it.
Well, see, that's what unfortunately has happened as a result of the civil rights movement and the last 70 years. We have turned black people into objects of worship, basically, almost. And nobody can say a discouraging word about any black person under any circumstances without being subjected to the toxic charge of being a racist. Now, unfortunately, when we have people that are supposedly speaking up for white people, like the conservative movement, like the Republican Party, who think this way, there's no way we can win that battle. There's a battle of ideas. The left has decided that rather than fighting the class war on the basis of economic class, like Marx and Engels said, they want to do it on the basis of race. And black people are the perennial good guys, no matter how bad they might be in real life, and white people are the perennial bad guys, no matter how good they might be in real life. And we're seeing this play out if you compare the media coverage of the Rittenhouse trial to the Arbery trial. Also, of course, in the Arbery trial, there's another important difference. The white defendants in this prosecution up there are white Southerners, and they're working-class white Southerners. So this fits into the Klan narrative. You know, if you see a person who looks like a working-class white person from the South, you are supposed to immediately think Klan. On the other hand, Rittenhouse is a little bit different. In fact, his name sounds like he might even be Jewish. I don't know. But, you know, one thing they don't want to talk about is Jewishness. But they do want to talk about race. They want you focused and to the exclusion of everything else on race, and they want you to never be aware of Jewish power and influence, or it's what it has to do with any of the left's initiatives.
Well, you know, again, we hope that Kyle Rittenhouse is found not guilty. I think one thing that should be mentioned is that the prosecution in the Rittenhouse case, you know, this is the personification of the United States government. This is the evil of the system in human form in the Rittenhouse case. The prosecution there, that is your government, ladies and gentlemen.
Their
government, but unfortunately it rules over us as well. The fact that they would go after this kid, I mean, this
And you are a bad guy. See, that's what you need
to
realize.
We'll be right back.
The runner on third takes a short lead. Elwood glances over. Now back to the plate. He sets the pitch. It's swung on. Strike three! They've won it! They have won it! World champions! Jim, what's it like down on the field?
John, it's a madhouse down here. I'm trying to get to Bob Elwood, the winning pitcher. Bob, how does it feel? Winning the seventh game on a strikeout.
Yeah, I thought he'd be looking for a slider, so I came on with my fastball.
World champions! Is this the greatest moment of your life?
Absolutely not. Jim, the best moments for me are breakfast with the kids. Long walks with my wife, just holding her hand, you know?
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Jim, when was the last time you held your wife's hand?
Well, it's been a while.
I tell you, you need to step up to the plate, Jim.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march. That is why we pray. And that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Well, welcome back, everybody. You know, you've heard the thing, Keith. I think you speak of the devil and he appears.
Speak of the devil and his image appears.
Well, sometimes the same is true for angels, and we've got one with us right now, our good friend Courtney from Alabama, who we just mentioned in the last segment, who has been following not just the Charlottesville trial, but Courtney, the courtroom content consumer, has been following dutifully and quite amazingly the Rittenhouse trial and the Arbery trial as well. And as I said earlier today, I got a real good handle on the Charlottesville trial, fairly good grip on the Rittenhouse situation, but not so much the Arbery thing. I think if all of these weren't taking place concurrently, any one of the three would certainly dominate coverage on this program. But with all three of them having at the same time, it's just you could only put your mind in so many places.
It would be made for Court TV. Now, I don't know if Court TV is covering any of these things.
Well, Courtney knows how to watch them on YouTube with some of the live streams, but the Charlottesville trial is not being televised anywhere. If you're not on that phone line, and we gave you the information on how to do that, you're not listening to it. You're going to have to rely on reports or after the fact broadcasts such as this. But anyway, Courtney, thanks for being with us tonight. This was another sort of impromptu spur of the moment appearance. You were with us for Halloween, as you so often are, and you're with us a few times a year, about quarterly. But
let us say this, Courtney. Thank you so much for covering these things. You're listening to these things, so we don't have to, and we owe you a debt of gratitude for that. So let us know what's going on, please.
Okay. Now, I really wanted to touch on something with the Arbery case that really disturbs me, because it seems like, you know, this is the one trial that I can't find much coverage on, even within the right. And it really frustrates me. I've been following it, you know, like I think like Court TV covers it live. I think CBS, you know, like all those usual types of channels have been covering it live. And I usually catch up on it at the end of the day, because during the day I'm listening to the Charlottesville trial. But I've been noticing a very disturbing trend going on inside of the courtroom for the Arbery case. I'm sure everybody in the audience knows what a good old boy is. It's the it's, you know, the liberals love to, it's a type of, you know, it's an older Southern man, who is usually right on point with his beliefs, but he might have an old-fashioned way, an old-fashioned awkward way of getting his point across when he's talking. He might have odd mannerisms, and the left loves to pick on him and make fun of him, even though what he's saying is right on point. Well, unfortunately, well, I think it's a good thing, but the media is going haywire over it. For the Arbery case, we have a couple of defense attorneys who are good old boys. And in the courtroom, they have been making very good points. They get up and they make good objections. They have concerns about the trial not being fair. One of them got up and said he was concerned about Al Sharpton, you know, making a visitation to the courtroom, intimidating the jury. And, you know, maybe he came across the wrong way. He went into, you know, black pastors showing up and stuff. And so the media went into a frenzy and called him a racist, and he had to apologize. But he was on point with his concern about Al Sharpton being in the courtroom. And I'm concerned about, you know, the media, you know, at the end of the day, the media has highlights and they're always focusing on him and what he said each day that, you know, that they can make fun of and everything that I think is on point. I think his concerns are legitimate. And he's not just getting picked on by the media. I mean, there's a couple of them in there, but one of them is really, is they're really having a field day with him. But, you know, it's not just the media that's picking on him. You know, I don't like how he's getting treated within the courtroom. The judge, who himself is a white Southern male, I mean, I'm assuming he might be a Democrat, I don't know, but he has this condescending attitude to this good old boy. Anytime he gets up and objects to something, anytime he has a legitimate concern on behalf of the defense, you know, this judge sits up there and gets all smug and is condescending to him and gets the smirk on his face like this is a game or something, and it's a serious issue. When the defense has a concern, they need to be taken seriously. They need to be given the benefit of the doubt. The prosecution should be the ones fighting an uphill battle. And the reason this upsets me so much, it upsets me for two reasons. Number one, it upsets me because all my life I've seen good old boys get made fun of. And, you know, and they're usually, you know, they're almost always, what they're saying is correct. It's just they get made fun of because of how they come across saying it and how they go about it. But I, you know, it hurts. It kind of hurts me when I continuously see them made fun of, maybe because it hits a little close to home. But on the other hand, you know, this is a serious matter. We're in a courtroom, and it breaks my heart that these men who the media is picking on, the judge seems to be picking on, the witnesses on the stand laugh at him and don't take him seriously and roll their eyes at him. And, you know, what concerns me about it is he's the biggest voice in the courtroom fighting for these men. And, you know, there's others like him in the courtroom on the defense side, but they're in there. They're the ones that are standing between these men, you know, well, other than what the jury decides, they're the ones in the courtroom fighting, standing in between these men, potentially going to prison and having their lives ruined. And it just sickens me that, you know, these good old boys, quote unquote, are getting trashed by the media. You know, they're not getting taken seriously by the judge. And it just sickens me. It really sickens me. Maybe somebody else has a different interpretation of what's going on. Maybe the judge is right. Maybe these defense attorneys are unprofessional. I don't know. But based on what, that's just how I'm seeing it, and it bothers me.
Well, Courtney, this is Keith. Let me just say this. We were talking before you came on about compare and contrast Rittenhouse versus Arbery. And we said that Arbery had two things that would make it, you know, be treated differently by the normie media. One, you have a black victim, and two, you have white Southern defendants. And I think that regardless, they could have had St. Paul come down to defend them, and they would still find a way to ridicule their counsel. Also, the approach that a judge takes to a particular side's lawyer or their arguments or whatnot has an incredible influence on juries. So basically what he's doing is poisoning, what this judge is doing, if he's doing what you're saying, is poisoning this jury to the defendants. I can tell you this, if it was a black lawyer representing them, they would be almost sycophantic. The court would be, and the judge would be, and the media would be, to this person. This is why, you know, that there's such a difference between the coverage that you get of the Rittenhouse trial and the Arbery trial. The defendants in the Arbery trial looked like they were right out of the cast of the Dukes of Hazzard, and that's what they want, okay? They see, Nazis and Southern whites are the people that the left loves to hate, and that's coming out in these trials.
I got to say this too, Keith, though, with the situation for the defendants in the Arbery case, is not like a doctor where you go into any doctor's office and they're going to treat you. Attorneys don't do that. I mean, they're supposed to, but it's not like that where attorneys will take whatever client can pay them the money. They routinely and almost exclusively, almost inevitably and without question, turn down unpopular, controversial defendants. And so you're left with, in some cases, the bottom of the barrel. Now, I'm not saying that's what the Arbery attorneys are, but I can guarantee you that they couldn't get the pick of the litter with regards to who would represent them.
Well, they're going to find people that are sympathetic with their viewpoint, and people that are sympathetic with their viewpoint are going to be Southern white advocates. They're not going to be Harvard, Yale graduates.
The biggest takeaway, and I got to say this for Courtney, I think that was her most impassioned, perhaps even after all these years, maybe the best segment she's ever done on the show. I know we a lot of times bring her on for lighter fare, but she showed some serious chops tonight in breaking that down. But I'll say this, had Arbery been white and had the people who had been shot in Wisconsin been black, you would have the exact polar opposite in terms of the reaction and the support that we see now in each of those two cases. You'd have inverse negative images on both sides. Well, Courtney, thank you so much for calling in and for sharing that with us. I know you've got a busy night. You've got family in town. We'll talk to you again soon, and Godspeed. We'll be back with more right after this, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
A longtime advisor to then-President Donald Trump, Steve Bannon, now indicted for criminal contempt of Congress.
The Justice Department's move exposes Bannon to fines and as much as a year in jail for each count. The House voted to approve a criminal contempt referral for him last month.
That's USA's Brad Bernards. The governor of Wisconsin has deployed over 500 National Guard troops to Kenosha to back up law enforcement if needed when the Kyle Rittenhouse double murder trial verdict comes in. The jury is to get the case after closing arguments, which are to begin on Monday morning. Comedian Dave Chappelle's alma mater in Baltimore, Maryland, is postponing a fundraiser that was set to feature the comedian next month. As many students at the school have been condemning Chappelle and his recent Netflix special, which featured mostly jokes about the LGBTQ community. And this is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Alaroot for Patriot VPN. Patriot VPN is a virtual private network service that uses military-grade encryption to protect your internet connection on all of your devices. With Patriot VPN, your data and internet privacy is secure anywhere in the world. Why do you need Patriot VPN? Cyber criminals, government, even your own internet service provider collect and use your private information without your knowledge. Examples in the news recently, remember all the companies that have been hacked? Cuba censored the internet to kill protests? Here in America, conservative groups are being actively targeted. Your personal information and internet history is being sold by your ISP. It's all happening every day, but not with Patriot VPN. With Patriot VPN, your internet activity and history is protected from prying eyes forever. Patriot VPN is a veteran-owned business right here in the USA. For business or your family, starting at only $6.95 a month, use code WAR and get 3 months free. With an annual subscription, it's all at patriotvpn.com. That's patriotvpn.com.
Consumer sentiment's running at its lowest level in a decade. The University of Michigan's Index of Consumer Attitude falling nearly 5 points in early November. It's now down more than 13% as compared to a year ago. The survey notes surging prices for homes and cars and big-ticket items, with Americans having little confidence that government policies are going to make any difference in the foreseeable future. One in four consumers surveyed complained about inflation causing them to lower their living standards this month.
This is the 87th overall successful recovery of our Falcon 9 first stage.
That from the official SpaceX stream, as a Falcon 9 rocket carried 53 more Starlink satellites into orbit today, lifting off from Cape Canaveral. It's the 31st Starlink mission, the goal of eventually providing worldwide broadband connectivity with those little satellites. And this is USA Radio News.
You know, it normally doesn't take us half a show to get into some doo-wop, but better late than never. And, Keith, that is, of course, the Edsels.
Right.
With Ramalama Ding Dong. Now, if you had a girl named Ramalama Ding Dong, what would you do with it?
Well, it would be almost as bad as if you drove an Edsel.
Well, tell us about the, you know, 1962, that's back when we all knew what to do.
That's right. At 62, and life was better, and life was sweet, and the left has not had not yet had its corrupting influence on society.
Look at the Edsels, all presentable there in their tuxes and their bow ties, and they're singing good songs and good music we can agree with.
They're dressed very presentably, and I'm sure
and great music, great music. You know, like last week when we were paying tribute to the departed Jewish entertainer David Blatt, a.k.a. Dave, Jay Black of Jay and the Americans. Great music. We love it.
Yeah, look, everybody was better back then. Let me tell you, not just white Gentiles, but everybody else in the racial and ethnic spectrum. It was just a better world, and people treated one another with respect more often than not back then.
You know, but that was the thing about it. The Washington Post didn't make mention of that, did they? No, they didn't.
No. You're supposed to believe some fable about, you know, like John, what's that guy's name? I keep getting a mental block for him. The guy that wrote Time
John
to Kill.
Grisham.
John Grisham. I knew it with the G, yeah. Yeah, all the whites are supposed to be like John Grisham characters, and unfortunately, we see that those stereotypes die hard, as Courtney was telling us about the judges' treatment of counsel and the McMichael defendants, you know, that I said, looked like they were plucked from the cast of Dukes of Hazzard.
Well,
see, people don't understand that judges have a great effect on people's perceptions of how smart a particular lawyer is or how cogent and on point his legal arguments are. If they want to treat you like a dummy, you will be portrayed as a dummy. If they want to treat a dummy like he's a genius, people will come away from the trial thinking that that dummy is a genius.
I got to go back to the Washington Post very quickly. Now, we always know everybody's always listening to us. But Michael Hill was an uncredited appearance. So the fact that they zeroed in on that last week, it means that they have to be listening to every show.
Well, we knew that from that SPLC article.
Well, we always knew. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've been around for almost 20 years, so we know. But the Washington Post, now, we've had a few dances with the Washington Post over the years, including the time, as I mentioned, after we had interviewed Donald Trump Jr., when they mentioned us in three separate articles in the same day. That's got to be close to a record. But one of the editors of the Washington Post called me on my birthday one year for an interview. This was back in the mid-2010s.
Happy birthday.
That was when I was still giving interviews. Now, I pick and choose. I've always been very selective about what interviews I grant and what access I deny. But I did do that one. He said, hey, happy birthday, James. You know, thanks for taking time on your birthday. And then we talked and we talked, and I don't even remember what the story was about. I could find it in the blog archives. It was years ago. And he said, just one last question. Now, Serv Kovaleski of the New York Times, he's interviewed me several times, and he said, how do you want to be presented? And I said, well, I'd appreciate it if you could go out of your way and not call me a Nazi or a white supremacist. You can call me a white advocate or a paleo conservative. You can call me this. You can call me anything but late for dinner, right, Keith?
Or cannibal or whatever.
And he has been good enough to quote me correctly and not use any of the invectives, okay? Serge Kovaleski, class act at the New York Times. We've worked with all sorts of media. But this piece of you-know-what at the Washington Post, he said, well, I said, well, honestly, you know, I don't consider myself a white supremacist or a Nazi or any of these things. So if you could just lay off that, you can call me this, all that, a white advocate. You can call me, I gave him, you know, a half a dozen different adjectives that would have been accurate descriptions. And what happens when the article comes out? Nazi, white supremacist.
What about Klansmen? I don't know. Tell me they left that off.
No, that was later. Well, you know, CNN, for God's sake, used to introduce me as a conservative talk radio host, which shockingly is what
that
I...
That lasted two shows, right?
Anyway, but yeah, so the Washington Post. Well, anyway, I want to go back to the Rittenhouse and Arbery, and I think we've made the point. If the races were reversed, the reaction would have been reversed. You would have all the conservative media being in favor of the guys in Georgia. And leaving Rittenhouse to hang out to dry. I am shocked that these limp-wristed, weak conservatives, the conservative establishment, who's lost every battle they've ever fought and will continue to lose, pushed back on the school moms being called extremists and domestic terrorists for not wanting critical race theory taught to their kids. And what I mean by that is they didn't want their kids being taught that they are evil from birth for being born white. And they've been called extremists and terrorists. They actually, Keith, though, the conservative establishment actually pushed back on that. I'm surprised they had that much backbone, considering how weak they are. But true to form, just this week, they showed that they were born to lose. Born to lose. That's a Full Metal Jacket thing. Matthew Modine, born to kill. They're born to lose. Joe Biden, on Veterans Day, was paying respects to Satchel Paige, and he made mention of the fact, and it is a fact, that Satchel Paige at one point in his life played in the Negro baseball leagues.
And that was the name given to it by the Negroes running it.
And so Biden actually used the factually and historically correct term for what that league was called. And all the conservatives, I saw it on Fox today, still 2 days later, they're talking about it. How out of touch and racist Biden is because he used the N-word.
Well, the correct term.
Yeah, right, right. So, I mean, you're born to lose by saying Democrats are the real racists because Biden mentioned the name of this league and Martin Luther King was really a conservative Republican. I mean, they're just terrible. And that's why their support of Rittenhouse, as righteous as it is, and it's correct as it should be, is just really leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, what it tells you is that there is going to be a blowback on the left, and it's already started with Youngkin's election in Virginia as governor.
Trump wins the presidency this November if the election was held this year.
Right. But the problem is we don't want the Donald Trump of 2019 to come back.
We want the Donald Trump of 2015, but we want him to be actually serious.
Yeah, right. We don't want Sean Hannity conservatism to go back to its accustomed position as a spokesman for the right. We need people that are willing to be advocates for white people, not people that want to, insist that we're the real keepers of the flame for Martin Luther King, and that Martin Luther King was a righteous and holy man, and that he and the Democrats are the real racists. All this baloney. We need somebody that will unapologetically stand up for our interests, the way that the Democrats stand up for the interests of Jewish power and influence and Negroes and other people, black people, everybody except white Gentiles.
Counselor, I got to get your opinion on this. There's already a narrative in place here. Should the verdicts go against the narratives? And the case in the situation with Rittenhouse is that the judge is obviously off his rocker. They have a picture of him reading a book about Christmas cookies, and they're saying, you know, it's the, you know, they've already
he's
got
what Joe Biden actually is what, how they're going to try to portray him.
And then, of course, in the Arbery situation, race is a social construct. It doesn't exist. That's what they always tell us. But wait until you get 11 white jurors on a on a jury, and then all of a sudden, the race matters big time.
And see, Courtney was right that they, you know, are trying to bring out all these hoary old images about white Southerners and using them against the defendants in this case. And she's probably right. It would be nice if the queer eye for the straight guy had gotten a hold of the McMichaels before the trial and groomed them up and did all this other stuff for them. But guess what? White Southern working class people have rights too, and they're entitled to a fair trial, and they're apparently not getting it based on what I heard Courtney say in her segment.
Here's something she wrote this week. Why doesn't Fox News put this much effort into going into how the Chauvin trial was a miscarriage of justice and how the Arbery trial is going the same route? He's talking about how much television time Fox has given Kyle Rittenhouse
or James Field.
And I don't begrudge Rittenhouse that. He deserves it. But I'm just saying, if the victims had been black in that case, Fox would have dropped him like a hot potato. Courtney continues.
Media do we narrative live? Chart that somebody gave us?
Yeah,
one
yeah,
time
yeah,
is
yeah.
Just perfect. I mean, it is so true, and it's as true to this day as it was back in 2014 when it first was circulated.
She asked question: do we live in a country now where every time the defendants are white men and the alleged victim is black, it's an automatic prison sentence? That's a good question.
Yeah, it is. We are the ones that are racially discriminated against. We're protected from that, supposedly, by the 64 Civil Rights Act. But apparently the courts won't interpret it the way it's written.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
On the Liberty News Radio Network.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Yeah.
Keith, I'll tell you what, the days may not be happy anymore, but I sure hope we haven't jumped the shark yet in terms of our listening audience's critique of our work even after 17 years. But boy, I'll tell you what, no matter what topic we're covering, you give me a song like that, insta good mood. It's just like putting on the microwave.
You know, it's incredible how quickly nostalgia kicked in for the 50s. I guess the first thing was that movie American Graffiti in the early 70s. And by the 80s, you know, you had the TV series Happy Days. In fact, did it start in the 70s or just
Well, we'll find out. Keep talking about it and we'll find out.
Well, we'll find out exactly how long it was.
Well, how does it make you feel?
Well, I have nothing but good memories about the 50s, really. They were great, except, you know, the real civil rights movement didn't start until the 60s.
First episode, 1974.
Okay, so see, that's it. It was right after, I think it was 72 or 73 that you had American Graffiti.
Gary Marshall was a writer on that. He died he died 5 years ago. I was going to say not too long ago. The years do blur now. Gary Marshall, what a talent.
But see, everybody realized that we had lost something important over the 60s. You know, it was not...
You don't necessarily reminisce so much about the 30s or the 20s or the 40s.
You can, but there's no decade.
1860s, yes, but
yeah, the decade that everybody focuses on is the 50s. In the 50s,
early
was,
60s.
Yeah, the 50s. Well, the
50s and early 60s.
Well, in the South, the 60s didn't happen until the 70s.
But so, for everywhere else, 60, 61, 62 is basically a continuation of the 50s.
Yeah, right. It was really 55 to 65 rather than 1950 to 1960.
Very good. Very good. Well, anyway, we like to play that music, number one, because we just like to hear it. So any excuse is good enough, and this is our show, so we can do what we want.
James has a nostalgia, truth be known, for the 80s as well, because that was his youth.
I do like the 80s, but boy, I hate I missed the rock and roll era, you know?
Well, think of it. They had a lot of good movies in the 80s. I mean, I think that was the last decade that we had.
Back
really
to the Future.
Movies.
I mean, you know, talk about a movie that brings into account the nostalgia of the 50s. Back to the Future was really perhaps the greatest comedy ever written.
Yeah, and then, of course, those Home Alone movies, I don't know if they were in the late 80s or the early 90s, but whatever they were, again, great movies. But, you know, the movies they're making now are all very forgettable, at least to me.
Well, and, you can't even go to a movie anymore. So I don't even know. There's so many different streaming platforms, I don't even know how you watch movies anymore. But anyway, let's get to this, Keith. You had a recommendation that we add something, we cross-post something to the blog this week, and we're going to transition now. In fact, we've been so busy tonight, I haven't even told you what's coming up in the third hour. The American Renaissance Conference is underway as we speak, happening around us, and sometimes we go up there.
We've looked to the east, we haven't seen a mushroom cloud, so apparently Antifa has not been able to totally destroy it.
Well, I'll tell you why that is, Keith, if you want to know. Jared has typically held his events in the spring or early summer. But like insects, Antifa gets lethargic in cold weather, at least down here in the South. Now, Antifa,
like
Chicago,
cockroaches.
Like a wasp. Have you ever seen a wasp just sort of staggering around, kind of discombobulated?
Yeah, we're wasps now.
Well, but the other kind.
They're cockroaches.
Anyway, Antifa, Chicago or Portland, maybe they're a little more acclimated to it, but down here in the South, you know, it gets dark at 3 o'clock after daylight savings time, and we hit that last Sunday. So it gets dark at 3, it's cold. I heard they had 20 people. I had been to an AMRIN before where there were hundreds of Antifa and about 1,000 state troopers or assorted law enforcement personnel to keep them away, unlike what they did in Charlottesville, by the way. And if they had done their job in Charlottesville, there'd never been a Charlottesville trial to cover. But none of that was happening tonight. I heard 20 people. The cold weather really just kept them inside.
Well, I don't know who put Jared and Ameren onto Montgomery Bell State Park, but it's perfect. One, it's rural. It's southern. The police are, you know, going to do a proper job, unlike the police in Charlottesville or in Minneapolis or in Portland, Oregon. And it's also far enough away from an urban center that a lot of these Antifa people don't have reliable transportation. Cars have probably broken down all along the road between Nashville and Montgomery Bell State Park.
Well, what happened with the Ameren thing, everything you mentioned there is valid, but in the case of Jared selecting that location, it was the largest state park facility that had function space, which means conference room space, underneath the same roof as sleeping rooms.
And Hope Hotel, yeah.
It could have been anywhere in the country, but
and
it just so happened to be there.
Yeah,
and a restaurant. It was just all right there.
It's amazing that in all of the United States, that is one place.
That is the
that
one, and it just so happened to be right down the road. But, of course, we've got to work on Saturday night. Sometimes we go up to Amherst.
Of course, SPLC has come out against them. This is some dark, honky plot to have this place there. They talk about Tennessee trying to foster racist tourism.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
they
we were cited in that one, too. We're cited everywhere. But nevertheless, I say all that to say this. In the next hour, we're going to take you live to the American Renaissance Conference. We had to work tonight, so I hope everybody there is enjoying it. But we're going to hear from Neil Kumar. Now, Neil Kumar is, of course, the Republican candidate for the United
Ozarks.
States House of Representatives.
The Arkansas Ozarks.
In Arkansas, that's right. So he's running. So not only is he going to give us an update on the status of his campaign and his latest happenings, he's also going to be reporting live from the field at Ameren. So we're going to get a twofer with Neil Kumar, and we're going to hear from other people that are there tonight at Ameren. We're going to hear their takeaways, the speakers, the scene. They're going to set the table for us. If you didn't go to Ameren, you got the next best thing coming up in the third hour, because we're going to take you there, at least via audio, and you're going to hear all about it from people who are there live on the scene. Live on the scene field report from Ameren coming up in the third hour. But Keith, with 2 or 3 minutes remaining this hour, and I really intended to spend an entire segment on this, but you recommended an article written by John Young at Western Voices World News, which is a website we like. It's called Step Zero. Give us a 3-minute takeaway on Step Zero and why you called it to my attention and thought it should be posted.
Well, Step Zero is a step that most people don't recognize exists. They talk about step 1, 2, and 3 and things like this, but they don't focus on step zero, which is the preparatory phase. Now, this article is why have we had such disastrous results at places like Charlottesville and other we have a white advocacy protest, public protest, and it goes south on us. It goes bad. Why is that? Well, he basically tells us it's because we've bought into the left's myth about the origins of the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement supposedly was a bunch of black people just randomly getting together, locking arms, swinging back and forth, singing spirituals, and the walls came tumbling down. Of course, it was nothing of the sort. It was totally backed and would have been an abject failure had it not been backed by Jewish power and influence. Jewish media control, Jewish wealth, Jewish legal know-how all played a part. And, of course, last but not least, Jewish money. They had battalions, busloads of lawyers showing up when they would have one of these civil rights protests. They funneled all these protesters through a Paris Island-like facility called the Highlander Folk School in Tennessee, where they taught them how to behave, and they culled out people that they thought were unruly or would not put a good face on the protest. Remember, you never saw grossly overweight people, or you never saw people in zoot suits or things like this. You had everybody dressed from central casting, wearing a white shirt, a skinny tie, a pair of horn-rimmed glasses, and they were taught how to behave. Now, they also did things that were very provocational to the police, but this was all done before the camera started rolling. The people in the news media back in those days, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, had a tacit agreement that they would not start rolling the film until they were supposed to, and when they were supposed to is if they provoked a violent reaction or something that could be spun into being a violent reaction against the protesters. And that's how the whole world got this idea that white Southerners were these evil, brutal people, you know, coming down on these angelic black people that were just sick and tired of being sick and tired, as Fannie Lou Hamer said. So see, this
I was wondering if you were going to connect the dots on that one.
And see, what happened was white people have bought into that fable, that untrue version of what actually happened in the Civil Rights Movement. So people on our side went to Charlottesville thinking they would be treated just like the black people were at Birmingham, at Selma, at Memphis, things like this. But they weren't. They were treated totally different. And same thing for the people at January the 6th in D.C. What would have happened in the Civil Rights Movement if the black and white liberal
You had very
had been treated very much worse
at the Capitol itself with literal terrorist attacks that don't get as much attention as
Yeah, exactly. You had people like Bill Ayers. Those people actually bombed over 1,000 different sites. And you hear... And he winds
it's
up
all in the
a,
article. It's yeah, all in the article.
All in the article. He got a job at the University of Illinois, never served a day in prison. And I don't think that happened to Bobby Frank Cherry and the people at the 4th Street bombing.
We're going to Amryn. We got to go to Amryn. We're going to Amryn. We're going to take you to Amryn next. Stay tuned for the third hour. You know where